This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe James Lacine. He's an author, actor, activist. His new one-man show is The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey. It's produced by Cecile Lipworth, who also joins us today, and Ripple Catalyst Studio. It's being performed tonight and through the weekend at the Adobe Rose Theater. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Great to be back.
Great to have you both back. Now, this is a one-man show about the murder of a gay teenager. Is this based on a specific story, a composite of stories?
You know, it's a story I made up. It's a story about this boy, this 14-year-old boy named Leonard Pelkey, who disappears from this New Jersey town. And I play all the people in the town who are trying to figure out what happened to him. And I wrote it as a novel in 2008. And I just wasn't quite finished with the story. I wanted to be in a room with people and talk about some of the issues that the play and the book addressed.
And those issues are, of course, how young people treat one another.
And also how older people actually protect those younger people and encourage them to be themselves, their sort of authentic selves, right? Like how much freedom do you give a young person to explore who they are, and how much encouragement, and how much do you just watch over them? It's something that I've just been, you know, I through my work with the Trevor Project, which is a crisis intervention and suicide prevention lifeline, I've just had a lot of experience with these kids who are out there who, it's like nobody's watching out for them. And I think so many of the things that happen to young people would be averted if people were watching them more closely.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, because that question of how much freedom to give your teenage kids is the question on every parent's mind in this society.
And it's also, you know, trying to figure out what the line is between what is bullying and what's just the sort of natural day-to-day, you know, kids will be kids kind of thing. Nobody really knows where that line is. It's always moving, and I think it's moving for every kid also. But it's really up to the adult community to be on the lookout for where those instances are happening, where it's unacceptable.
Now, the young man in the play, Leonard Pelkey, is a guy who, if I understood it correctly, he's being fostered by a mother who's a hairdresser.
He's come to this town sort of as a teenager. He's come as a 14-year-old, or came a couple of years ago when he was 12, and he's living with this family, this woman who runs a hair salon and her daughter, and they kind of take him in because he has no place else to go, but they come to understand what a big contribution he's made to their lives by the end of the play. They really understand how he brightened their whole community in some way.
And then, of course, there are questions of what are the motivations of these bully types, and where are they coming from, and what stresses do they have in their lives, and what is stimulating them to do what they do? One of the kids that you portray is, you know, he's delivering his lines between, like, acts of playing video games.
You know, I think one of the things that the Trevor Project has taught me is that, you know, the bully, or the person who is actually doing the bullying, is often suffering as well. Like, they're in bad shape too. You know, it's not like they're the demon in the story. They're also, you know, they're in need of some attention and some care themselves.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think that's what a lot of anti-bullying work in the schools is trying to do. And in fact, the performance tonight is a benefit for the Santa Fe Mountain Center. And maybe you can talk about that, Cecile. But the Mountain Center, I think, is so focused on exactly what those dynamics are and how to intervene and how to think about them and how to get kids to be aware of them.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for having us on the show. And the Mountain Center definitely is one of the key programs in the city that is working to look at the bullying issue in schools, and I think they do an excellent job because the programs are run youth-driven, youth-run. They take the youth voice into consideration of how things should be happening, rather than coming in and saying, "You know what? We've got this great idea. Here's how we're going to run this new, the Gay Straight Alliance." They really let the youth in the schools run the programming and feed off of their perspectives, which I think is really, really important in everything. And I just to sort of come circle on that about my own. I have a 13-year-old teenager who's been a very independent child since she was, born. And I think it is, she's been a teenager trapped in a 2, 3, 4-year-old body, 5-year-old body. She's finally come into her teenagehood. But I think the thing about, listening to your children, listening to the teens who are participating in the Gay Straight Alliance, listening to your own children, and also the perspective you have when you're bringing up a teen, and that sort of boundary of where you're the parent trying to sort of protect and help and guide the child, but also understanding their own individuality and that this is their expression, and how do you sort of intercept that as a parent and or a guide or a, a community really, and how do we really look at that? And I think that's kind of what is interesting for me and drew me in amongst many of the other pieces of the play. But I think, obviously on a personal level, it just brought up some things of, oh, right, we have to look at the brightness of my own child and say, wow, that's something bright and unique about her, and that's what she's teaching me, and how we can work as a team in her growing up to be a healthy adult.
And I think so much of the thing that parents go through is, I mean, parents were born in a different time and were trained with values that are kind of regressive at this point in history. I mean, many of us were trained not to understand a thing about gay, straight, bisexual, any of that stuff, and to have judgments about it or not to deal with it at all. And then when you are raising or working with a young person, how to let go of all that training from your own childhood.
Yeah, but I think that we, gay, straight, transgender, whatever, I think everybody has this experience, which is one of the reasons why I think the play is so universal, is that we all went through this period where we were growing up kind of grooving on ourselves and thinking like, ah, this is so great. I'm a person. And then suddenly you encounter somebody in your environment who's like, who doesn't like you and who's out to get you, or like out to like turn down your brightness. I think that's across the board.
Yeah,
I don't care who you
totally.
are, like, it's either an adult or some person in your school where you suddenly become aware that how could somebody not like this?
Right.
And that's really what this play is about. It's about, that moment in a person's life when you cross over into that, what's wrong with this? And how we can help young people to get through that period, because everybody goes through it.
Do you remember those moments in your own life?
Oh my God. I actually put it in. So, in my last one-person show, I played this character named Trevor, and he was a 13-year-old boy who realizes he's gay. So a lot of the experiences of that a lot of the scenes are actually from my
You,
life.
yeah.
One of them in particular was, I remember the day, I'll never forget it, and of course now it's memorialized in that film, when Mary Zapatelli and Francine Antonicelli, my two closest girlfriends in grammar school, told me that everyone was talking about me because I walked like a girl. And I was like, what? I do not. Like, it was beyond me. Like, I it was suddenly you see yourself from the outside and you're horrified. And, they coached me through it and,
Well, and what happened? Like, how did you take that? Did you try to walk
I
differently?
didn't walk for like a week. I became super self-conscious, and I tried to change myself, which is not like the best solution. But in the film of Trevor, it's hilariously portrayed, and turned out to be a very funny story that I was able to mine, which is, I think, partly what you do as a writer. You take these humiliating and terrible subjects and you try to repurpose them for other people's benefit.
Yeah, and I think, given the experiences I've had over the years as well in the women's movement, I think that that's also a thing about And as James said, it's such a universal topic, and specifically in my world with women, how we sort of are growing up and then we're these fierce, awesome young girls. And then suddenly at 13, we're told, oh, you're not skinny enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not sexy enough. And it's not just the people, but it's the culture is telling us all those messages. And I think there's incredible, I look at my daughter and her friends, and I think they really understand that now. There's so much more conversation about that. Like, they don't, there's, of course, there's still the piece of, like, the beauty piece of it. But there's definitely the conversation around LGBT issues are so non, it doesn't matter to them, really. You know, they're, like, very accepting of who's gay in their class, who's not.
In some places.
In some places.
You're lucky.
Yeah, we're living in Santa Fe, which is a very... It is much more open than in other places in the country. But there's more discussion around issues, and I think that is a huge piece of changing the culture, that we that the youth start seeing that, and that we also start listening. We may not have grown up like that, but we can listen and start changing that.
It's also what's so great about being around young people. Their job is actually to show us what the future is going to look like. And I can't be around them enough because I'm not going to live forever. So I want to know what it's going to be like, you know, 50 years from now. And they're already living it. They're living the future in the way that I was living the future when I was 13, 14, 15 years old. And I knew that being gay was not a big deal. I knew it wasn't a sin. I knew it wasn't a crime. And I knew it wasn't a mental illness. I knew it. Of course, I was careful enough to watch myself around other people, but in my heart, I knew that that was baloney.
A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people internalize that and have a lot of self-doubt, self-hatred, all the kinds of stuff, and go to therapy for years and years. How did you know?
Because it was love. I think it's one of the things that people confuse, especially with young people, that they think it's about sex. It's about love. I knew from the moment I was able to love, which was probably when I was 5 years old, really, when I started thinking about love. You just know your orientation, and you're orientated towards love, really. And so, you know, the sex comes later when it becomes like, you know, like when you you have to do something about it. But I think I never believed that something so beautiful could be something so bad.
We're talking to James Lacine and Cecile Lipworth about the play The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey. Now, do you, James, I mean, here you are in Santa Fe. Are you touring all over the country?
You know, I did the show off-Broadway in New York. We had a nice, wonderful run at the West Side Theater. And then we took it to Los Angeles, where I was just there for a month of January. And so I just thought maybe I'd stop by here at Cecile's invitation and, you know, do it here because I love it here. And so any opportunity to come here. And then there are other places that we'll be going, like San Francisco and Dallas, Washington, D.C. and Miami, hopefully in the winter.
The reason I was asking is because I was wondering... You know, you're talking about how young people are showing us what the future is like, and if it's different from place to place. What are you seeing in the different places where you're talking to young people?
Well, you know, I think I'm mostly in cosmopolitan places, like, right? I'm mostly in cities. But, you know, through the work that the Trevor Project does, talking to young people in every corner of this country, you really see how it changes from place to place and how different it can be, like, even within... you know, a 50-mile radius, or even from one town to the next. It's just really, it's such a challenge right now because I think for many kids, they see in the media and they hear from us how it's all changed and it's all, everything's a go. And yet they're living in communities that it's not all go and it hasn't changed. So they can't figure out how to make this leap between their very... repressive life and this very big, gigantic, welcoming future, right? It's very hard for them to imagine how to get there. And I think it's up to us to help them over that divide, or at least hold that space for them that we're, you know, we're waiting for them. We'll help them in whatever way when the time comes.
Let's talk more about Trevor. That was a movie that aired on HBO that was based on a piece from a play that you wrote.
Mm-hmm. A solo play.
A solo play.
Just like this one.
And the effect of this movie, Trevor, was amazing. I mean, I think that's what we talked about the last time that you were on the air several years ago. One of the things that came from it was a hotline where people can call. Tell us about that.
So when so Peggy Reiske, who directed and produced the film, and Randy Stone, who produced it with Peggy, the three of us, when we made arrangements with HBO, it, you know, won the Academy Award, which was amazing for live action short. And then a couple years later, HBO agreed to show it on TV. And Peggy and Randy and I thought, well, this is an incredible opportunity. It was 1998. There was nothing on TV about, you know, being gay. I mean, nothing had happened yet. I think Ellen had just come out. And we just thought it would be a good idea to put a telephone number at the end of the film in case there were kids out there who identified with the character of Trevor and needed someplace to turn. So within a very short amount of time, Peggy and Randy and I, we started the Trevor Project, launched it August 8th, 1998. And, you know, it's been really saving young lives for almost 18 years, which is incredible to me.
So they call this number, is it like 24/7? There's somebody on the other end of the phone you can talk to. And is it specifically for gay youth or sort of,
you know,
all-purpose hotline? Or
you know, it was started as a lifeline for gay and lesbian youth, ages 13 to 24. And, you know, then it became, you know, gay, lesbian, bisexual. Then it was gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And then it's now GLBT and questioning youth. And that's really everybody. And we never ask. You know, we get 45,000 telephone calls a year from kids around the country. And not all of them are rescue calls, but every single one of them is important as a way of establishing for young people this idea that it's okay to ask for help. Not only okay, but it's kind of what makes us human, to be able to reach out to another human being when you're in trouble and ask for help. So, you know, I think we are open to anyone who calls that line. And sometimes we get calls from, you know, people who are 30, 40, 50 years old, not gay, not within our demographic. But you just want to be there for somebody and sort of direct them in the direction where they can actually get the help they need.
Who's on the other end of the line when they call?
Superheroes.
I mean, volunteers, therapists.
Yeah. You know, we have, there are probably about 300 volunteers who do this. We have several call centers, and we, you know, they're amazing. They're incredibly well-trained to answer the phones and really be there and really listen. You know, I think it's more about just being there to listen than it is to tell any young person what to do. I'm always, you know, amazed talking to any young person how much they know.
Yeah.
And how well they know themselves. So it's really just a matter of listening to what they have to say and what they know about the world they live in and themselves and the best way going forward.
We're talking about the show, the one-man show, The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey. And this is the inaugural production for you, Cecile Lipworth, and Ripple Catalyst Studio. Tell us more about what you're doing these days.
Thanks. Well, I launched Ripple Catalyst Studio in January or February, really because the work that I've done over the last 14 years and really my life, seeing sort of the ripple effect that so many pieces have had on my own life, I wanted to start something that really showed us how every action we take and everything we do has a ripple effect on us as individuals, our community, and ultimately on the planet. And I saw James's show last year in February when it was he was at Dixon Place before he went off Broadway. And I just got cold shivers watching it, thinking, wow, this is really incredible theater, number one. And also that it has that same ripple effect, that it has that effect of changing people's lives when they come in and watch the piece and walk out with a different thought oh, wow, that changed me. And that's really what I want to do with events, conversations, productions. So I said to James, come to Santa Fe. Let's do this in Santa Fe. And he was like, great, let's do it. And then, you know, very fortunately and incredibly, he got this brilliant run off Broadway, which was critically acclaimed by the New York Times, the New York Post, every single newspaper, magazine,
Katy
Broadway.
Perry.
Katy Perry,
Katy Perry came to see the show when I was in L.A. And she said, she leaned over to me. She touched me on the shoulder and she said, your show, body chills, three times. I told her I was going to put it on the poster.
There you go.
Body chills three times.
Body chills three times. And that truly is, you know. So I want to encourage people to come because we don't get this kind of theater very often in Santa Fe. And I wanted to bring something to Santa Fe where we could all sit in community, watch something incredible, watch an incredible storyteller on stage.
And laugh.
And laugh.
By
and
the
cry
way, it's funny.
And walk out with a, you know, with a thought like, oh, wow, I didn't think of things that way. Wow, how can I be different from that? And also to have an opportunity for youth to see the show. And so Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock is actually going to be very much of a youth audience. James will do a talk back or a post-show discussion with youth. And I think it's an opportunity for the youth to have a conversation with James and also for James to see how incredible the youth are in our town as well. So for me, that is just the first sort of like stone throw that will take the ripple further into the community. And that's really what I want to do with the company.
The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey is at the Adobe Rose Theater tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Tonight at 7:30 and Saturday and Sunday at 7 in the evening, and also Sunday at 2 o'clock matinee. The matinee is, as Cecile just said, for youth. There will be a discussion afterwards. If people want to find out more, they can go to ticketssantafe.org. They can call, or if they want to get tickets, they can call also 988-1234 or ticketssantafe.org. And do you have a website if people want to find out more about your...
I do have a website. It's up right now. It's we-ripple.com. We Ripple together. And there's really not much on there besides James's play at the moment as things evolved rather quickly. And so we had to, but there is a website. Tonight's show is a benefit for the Santa Fe Mountain Center program, the New Mexico Gay Straight Alliance Network. We're very excited. We'll have hors d'oeuvres, light hors d'oeuvres, schmoozing from about 6:30 till the show starts at 7:30. And then afterwards, there will be a meet and greet with James. And it will really be a fun, entertaining evening. So I encourage everyone to come this evening. And this is another way of having a ripple effect. Your money really goes towards a program that's going to stop, that's going to help youth in Santa Fe.
James Lacine, author, actor, and activist, Cecile Lipworth of Ripple Catalyst Studio. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.